This man was born by a miracle. And he had, you might say, a transitional ministry. A transitional ministry is very difficult because it's not understood well, and there are no patterns by which he could pattern his ministry. He lived a disciplined and self-denial type of living. He challenged by his preaching the multitudes. He had a great delight and devotion to Jesus Christ. And he stood against divorce and remarriage. And he practiced greatly the ordinance of water baptism, from which he got his name. John the Baptist was born from a miracle. I'd like to begin in Luke chapter 1 and beginning in verse 5. It starts his background in the days of Herod, king of Judea. Just that phrase now tells us a lot. First of all, this is the Herod that was distinguished among all the other Herods. He was called Herod the Great. Herod the Great. He ruled over the land of Palestine. He was king of Judea. His rule covered the province of Judea. It took in Galilee. It took in Samaria. And it went as far as east of the Jordan River. Yes, he was king over what we call Israel. However, you might say, rather than ruled over it, he oppressed it. Because he was, number one, not a true king. He was not even a Jew. He was an Idumean. That is, he came from the tribe and the lineage of Esau, the twin brother of Jacob. And he ruled over this nation. Can you imagine the Jewish people, how they would feel having an Idumean, and a son of Esau, ruling over, not the son of David, not from the lineage of David, but this man sitting on the power of the throne of Israel. But Israel had forgotten their God. The Jews had turned away, and of course they were under the dominance of Rome. And how did Herod keep his power? Herod used all kinds of ways. He had a way of getting to ingratiate himself with the powers of Rome through bribery, fast talking, corrupt politics, and constant scheming. Herod was able to maintain his favor with the Roman powers. And so he had some friends who went to the Roman Senate to put him in charge of that area, and he asked for this title: make me king of Judea. I want to be that king. His friends Antony and Octavius, about 35 years before John the Baptist was even born, went to Rome, and the Senate at Rome gave him this title, King of Judea. Now, it sounds very pretentious, King of Judea. However, he was nothing but a puppet from the Caesars at Rome. And he curried favor with the Caesars at Rome by doing things like, oh, we can turn this town over on the western coast. We'll make it the name Caesarea. We'll name it after the Caesars. He did all kinds of things. He made little temples, and he would name them after rulers and people over in Rome to gain their favors. He was clever. He was a very astute politician, but he was a moral cesspool. He had 10 wives. He was terribly brutal. He could kill anybody who stood in his way. And in his older years, he became extremely paranoid. He was worried about all his wives or his children, his sons. In fact, he killed a number of his own family. One of his wives, some of his sons, and other relatives were summarily executed because he felt they were in his way or they threatened his power. He put a number of wealthy Jews to death and took their money and put it into his own accounts. You know, his most famous brutal act was killing all the children. His order to kill all the babies in Judea from 2 years old and younger to make sure he got rid of anyone who was going to be king of the Jews. You remember when the Magi said, "We saw this sign in the heavens. There's the king of the Jews." He said, "Well, king of the Jews, where is he?" "Well, he's a baby and we're looking for him." "Well, you be sure and bring him, you know, tell me where he is," King Herod said. And then he put an order, kill all the babies, kill all the male babies. So it wasn't surprising when you grow up with a father this bloody, this evil, this rotten, that his own son, Herod Antipas, later beheaded John the Baptist. But as terrible as those days were, in the days of Herod, God brought forth John the Baptist. And also, the statement in the book of Matthew chapter 2, in the days of Herod, this young woman conceived, you know, and she brought forth Jesus Christ. Both of them were brought forth in a time of extreme difficulties, in a time when darkness ruled over the land. And you know, as the scripture says, in the darkness there shined a great light. Now during that time, in the days of Herod, Herod was over the political scene, and as you know, in Israel, the high priest was one of the powerful rulers of Israel. In ancient Israel, the high priest was there. He was really the center of all the religious life because it was built around the temple. So here came Herod and the priests. And who appointed the priests every year? King Herod. So the priests who used to come from the Aaronic, you know, line, the line of Aaron, who were to be priests for a lifetime, oh no, that wasn't the way anymore. The religious life of Israel then became corrupted when the priesthood became corrupted. And it was Herod who began to appoint the high priest. So that's first thing. And then he constructed a temple. He built the great temple there. Herod's temple was supposed to be extremely beautiful. And they said, if you haven't seen Herod's temple, you've never seen anything as beautiful as that. It was one of his big projects he started it, and it took so long, he died before it was finished. He chose the high priest, and as you know, a good leader, a good priest can make the people good and the nation good. A bad leader and a bad priest can make the people and the nation bad. So Herod pointed the positions. And what were those positions? They were political positions. If you're appointed the high priest, you get to stay a high priest as long as you favor Herod and the rulers. You get to stay a high priest as long as you kind of play ball with the rest of us. You get to stay a high priest and have all this. Then if you just keep your mouth shut about what we're doing here in the political scene, shut your mouth. Keep quiet. Overlook the evils. Encourage the influence of other priests to do likewise. You know, telling the priests just to kind of cool it. Play ball. So the corruption of the priesthood was there. And of course, it manifested itself completely in the opposition to Jesus Christ. Why do you think Jesus came along and, you know, you and your traditions, you know, hypocrites, you do this, you got this wrong, you got that wrong, you concentrate on the wrong things, you're always upset about something that doesn't matter, and the things that matter you don't care about. And so he would really rail at them, and they hated him for it. It was believed that there were some 20,000 priests during that time. Priests were abundant. Because you load into the priesthood, that was a pretty nice little thing, and let's get you. And so they all came into the priesthood. Huge number. And they were everywhere. It was conspicuous. And so many that they had to be put down in courses. Now, if you remember what King David did, he, during his time, you'll read this in 1 Chronicles 24, King David set the priests in different courses because they had a lot of priests then, all the tribe of Aaron, so that they could have their turn at serving at the temple. And so they established that. during the time of King Herod. And so we read in chapter 1, verse 5, in the days of Herod the king, there was a priest named Zacharias of the division or of the course of Abijah. The course of Abijah was the eighth course. Now, those courses got lost, and a lot of administration had taken place, were lost during the years that Israel was in captivity. But when they came out, they reestablished it. They reestablished it, and when they returned from Babylon, and they reappointed 24 courses, just like they had done using the older names of the Bible at First Chronicles. They weren't exactly the same. So he and his wife from the daughters of Aaron. Now, look here. He was a priest. That meant he had to come through Aaron and of the division of Abijah. And he had a wife, listen to that, from the daughters of Aaron. So his wife was also a lineage to Aaron. And her name was Elizabeth. Definitely, not only was he rightly a priest, but his wife was a daughter of Aaron. Now, in fact, if you go to Exodus chapter 6 and verse 23, I won't turn there particularly, but you'll see that one of the names, in fact, the name Elizabeth is used of Aaron's wife. Only in the Hebrew, it's Elisheba from the Old Testament, translated in the New Testament as Elizabeth. Aaron's wife was named, if we will put it in the Greek area, it would be Elizabeth. Very definitely consecrated. The prominence of the priesthood showed that the great national feasts of the Passover, Pentecost, the pilgrim feasts, three times in a year, three seasons, you appear before the Eternal. Those were the pilgrim feasts when people came in toward the temple, and the priests were there making it abundant. So the people came, they were attracted, there was a lot of celebration, there was pomp, there was ceremony, it attracted the crowds. So at every part it looked so good. I mean, people were religious, they were putting their, they studied microscopically the scriptures and were trying to get everything right. They would review this and review that. But it was all superficial, because truly most people in Judea were not religious. They could care less about religion. It was superficial. Few worshipers were genuine. So beneath the surface lay this corrupt life where people only were trying to get what they could get selfishly. It looked religious, but it wasn't religious. It wasn't true. They weren't truly sincere. That's why Jesus used the term hypocrites. You wash the outside of the cups, but inside you're full of evil and dead men's bones. And Jesus said this, and Jesus said, he really condemned them. He talked about, you're blind guides, and you're leading other people, and they fall into the ditch. You've gone so far away from the truth of the scriptures. You don't care about the truth of the scriptures. You care about your positions. You care about the way of life that you've come to live. In contrast, however, there were a few people who were really good. And here was what we have in verse 6 about his parents. They were both, verse 6, righteous in the sight of God. It's one thing to be righteous in the sight of men, because people don't know your inner thoughts, they don't know your way of life, they don't know all your mistakes, and you look good. You're fine in the sight of men. But what a statement. They were both righteous in the sight of God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and ordinances or requirements of the Lord. They walked blamelessly. I mean, that doesn't mean perfectly. They weren't sinless. Of course, we know that. But they were, as people, they were looked on as right. They were sincere. They were totally dedicated. They truly loved God. They wanted to do what God wanted. They wanted to serve God in every possible way they could. So that the character of these two people is without denial in Luke's statements. Righteous before God, walking in all the commandments and the moral law. The commandments are the moral law. The ordinances were the ceremonial and other laws. In a way that was faultless, blameless. In any age, regardless of the people around. Now, you know, you're talking about other priests are filled with corruption, filled with this graft and all this stuff. Remember what Jesus said about some of the priests? You love to sit in the chief seats. You love the aplomb of people in the marketplace calling you rabbi and all that. You love all that. But these people didn't. These people truly serve God. So even in a corrupt society, even in when things are falling apart, you and I can live a life that is not corrupt. You and I can live walking in all the commandments and the ordinance of God blamelessly. We can. Now, it tells us a little bit about them in verse 7. They had no child. They had no child. Now, a wonderful couple, dedicated priest, a daughter of Aaron. But verse 7, they had no child. Why? Because Elizabeth was barren. And now they were both advanced in years. She was past childbearing years. Now it happened when he was performing his priestly service. Now here he was doing what he's supposed to do. He's in the temple. He's performing his priestly service in the appointed order of his division. Again, once again, he's in the order of Abijah. He's there. According to the custom of the priestly office, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple. Now, there are two Greek words for in the New Testament for temple. One is this word. This Greek word that is translated temple, and the Greek word is naos, N-A-O-S. That meant the inner temple. The other Greek word meant the outer temple precincts. So if you go up to the temple, if you were just an ordinary Jew and not a priest, you would walk up to the outer area of the temple, the outside, where the altar burnt offering was. And even there, it was divided into men and women. Women couldn't be a certain place. And then Gentiles had to be way back beyond that. And you couldn't get closer, you know, if you weren't a Jew, you couldn't get that close. So you walk up to the temple area. That was another Greek word. But this word meant the inner sanctuary. You walk inside the temple where the sanctuary was, where the curtain finally was before you went into the Holy of Holies. So you went into that place, and you could take incense, and you could waft it up into there when you're giving an offering, when you bring in the fat of the offering and stuff like that. You could waft that up and pray in there. So here he came to do his service. And it says he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. When you say burn incense, what are we talking about burning incense? You're burning incense, and David talked about it in one of the Psalms. He said, you know, may my prayers come up to you as incense. Incense in the New Testament is used as prayers of the saints in the book of Revelation. So here he was. And it's the hour of prayer. Listen, verse 10. And the whole multitude of people were in prayer outside at the hour of the incense offering. So everybody else, he's the priest, he's doing incense in front of that opaque curtain, you know, but it was wafted through that curtain where the Holy of Holies was. That's where the Ark of the Covenant was supposed to be and all that. And he was wafting that in there. And all the people were praying. It was an hour of prayer. So people were praying. They were looking to God. And what happens while he's there? and an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing to the right of the altar of incense. Now, he's got the altar. He's doing this incense right there. There's an altar of incense. He's burning the incense. He's making sure it goes into that curtain. Zacharias was troubled when he saw the angel, and fear gripped him. All of a sudden, what are you doing here? Who's supposed to be in here? I'm supposed to be. I'm the priest. I'm supposed to be in here. What are you doing in here? And there's a guy, somebody's sitting there. What are you doing? So I'm sure it would grip you, if all of a sudden somebody, you get scared if you're in your house and somebody else, maybe your husband and wife is in the house and you're in the room and you think they're in somewhere else, and all of a sudden they show up, you see somebody, it just scares you, and I'm sure fear gripped him. I'm sure of that. The angel said to him, "Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, Zacharias. For your petition, see, he prayed. He kept praying. I wonder what he prayed about. Has been heard. And your wife, Elizabeth, here's his prayer, will bear you a son." He kept asking for it. He kept asking for it. "And I wish I had a son. God, I wish you'd give me a son. Oh, God, I wish you'd give me a son. And your petition has been heard. Your wife, Elizabeth, will bear you a son. And you will give him the name John." Now, there's the instruction. You're going to give him the name John. Not any other name. You're going to have to give him this name. "You will have joy and gladness." You'll have joy and gladness. You don't have joy and gladness if you don't want a child. A lot of people don't want a kid. Oh, no, you're going to have another kid. But these people wanted a child. And they had joy and gladness when they got a child. They're going to have a child, joy and gladness. And he said, many will rejoice at his birth. You're going to have other people happy about his birth. Because, they're your friends, maybe relatives. Other people are going to be very happy. And then it says this about verse 4:15. "For he will be great." He will be great. Not great in the sight of Rome. Not great in the sight of give himself this title. Herod the Great was called. That's the scriptures never use that phrase. But in history, he was called Herod the Great. And he was the one that built the temple. And he's the one that appointed the priests. He's the one that curried favor. He's the one that ordered the killing of the infants. Herod the Great. But no, this man will really be great. Not a fancy, fake, faux title. He will be great in the sight of the Lord. He will be great in the sight of the Lord. He wasn't great in the sight of most people. "And he will drink no wine or liquor, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit while yet in his mother's womb." Filled with the Holy Spirit from the time of his mother's womb. "And he will turn many of the sons of Israel back to the Lord their God." In a time when people are in darkness, when a time when there's corruption galore, when a time when Israel, the Jews, were subject to the Roman Empire and an Idumean king who ruled over them, appointing high priests who were not from Aaron's, necessarily from Aaron's lineage, who were all political, in a time when corruption ruled the land, in a time when people had gotten scoffing about religion, or they were so meticulous about religion that it drove the religious to became craziness. We get craziness. People lose their balance. They lose their good sense. "In that time, he will turn many of the sons back to the Lord their God. It is he who will go as a forerunner before him." That is who? "In the spirit and power of Elijah." Now, he's going to fulfill some things in the spirit and power of Elijah. to quote, here's how they quote from the Old Testament, to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children and the disobedient to the attitude of the righteous. Now, the King James says to the wisdom of the just. And the phrase attitude means an insightful understanding, an insightful way. So you could say wisdom. Wisdom of the righteous. What's the wisdom of the righteous? And compare it to the stupidity of the unrighteous. The wisdom of the righteous. It's an attitude, it's a way that puts where the true values really are. What are the real things that are important? What are the things that are unimportant? Our society can't figure it out. You know, recently, I don't know, you know, July 1, guess what? Around here in this county, I don't know if it's all the whole state or just this county, but now you can't get plastic bags anymore. Okay, plastic bags are banned. And you can have paper bags if you're willing to pay 10 cents a bag, you know, for it. If you go to the grocery store, they'll charge you 10 cents now. And plastic bags are banned. However, my newspaper comes in plastic bag. Most of the things I get are wrapped in plastic, heavy plastic. All kinds of stuff in the stores are wrapped in plastic. This is in plastic. They haven't banned plastic bottles. There are plastic water bottles all over the place. They're still selling plastic water bottles. They still plant this in plastic and that in plastic. But we banned plastic bags. Aren't we good? Aren't we wonderful? Aren't we righteous? We're going to put out all kinds of things that are in plastic. But, you know, we got plastic bags. We finally got rid of plastic bags so we can pat ourselves on the back. Truly, we're wonderful. I mean, it's unbelievable how our politicians go off the deep end of things, how people don't seem to grasp what is really important from what is unimportant, or they do something that contradicts. Why are you doing this when you're doing so much more pollution over here? So here we are. The wisdom of the just, the attitude of the righteous, so as to make ready a people. Now you have two words here. One is make ready a people. You know, to get things ready. You know how you get things ready? You get ready. Like you go, people, make ready. You know, people say, well, where are we going to make ready for the Passover? Remember they ask that question. Where do you want us to make ready? A people that are prepared. Now, one is to make ready. The other is they have been prepared. They're prepared for the Lord. He's going to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Now, Zacharias, you know, he'd been praying. You know, you pray for things. You pray and pray and you pray for something. And then when it happens, or you think you're going to get the answer, and you're going to get the answer, you go, really? You know, is this true? You know, you've been praying for it. Is it really? I can't believe it. And you say, I can't believe it. Oh, really? It's going to happen? I can't believe it. And so here's Zacharias. Now he's been praying and praying. And the angel says, what did he say to him? Your petition has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear a son, and you will call his name John. Well, Zacharias then, wow, he's going to be great. My son's going to be great. Not like Herod the Great, but a real great in the sight of the Lord. And Zacharias said to the angel, well, how will I know this? How can I know this for certain? I mean, how can I believe this? How will I know this? For now he says, now look what he says. After praying for it and praying for, because I'm an old man. And my wife is advanced in years. I mean, you know, really, how am I going to really know this is true? Because, you know, I'm old. My wife's old. How are we going to know this for sure? And so even though you pray for it, even though that's been your heart's desire, even though you wanted it, but how can I know it? What is knowing it? What is faith? Faith is the evidence of what you don't see. Faith is the substance of what you're really hoping for. It's the reality of the hoped for thing. So he said, how am I going to know this? I'm old. My wife is old. The angel answered and said to him, I am Gabriel. who stands in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. This is the same Gabriel that appeared unto Daniel in chapter 8 of Daniel. It's the same Gabriel that spoke to Daniel, your prayers have been heard. I am to come to tell you you're a man greatly beloved. Here's Gabriel, once again, one of the great archangels, and he says, I am here to stand. I'm standing in the presence. I stand in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you, to bring you this good news. And behold, verse 20, you shall be silent and unable to speak until the day when these things take place, because you did not believe my words. There's a penalty for unbelief. You didn't believe it. I told you. I came to you. You saw me. You got afraid. I told you, don't be frightened. I told you, your petition has come before God. Your petition has been heard. I told you, you're going to get what you wanted. I even told you how great your son is going to be, and I told you his name. And then you ask me, how can I know for sure? How can I be certain? How can I really know? Well, you will not be able to speak until it happens. And then you'll get your voice back. Because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their proper time. You know, it's an interesting thing how God does things properly. Sometimes we want it when we want it, but God doesn't want to give it to us until he's ready. Sometimes we want things the way we want them, and God will do it in his proper time. There's a time. God has a plan. God usually does have a plan. And for you and me, when we are in God's presence, God has an overall plan for our lives. Yes, God does things. He fulfills them in their proper time. Verse 21, the people were waiting for Zacharias. So they're in there, they're waiting. He went in. He's got the incense, he's still in there. And they were wondering at his delay in the temple. How come he hasn't come out yet? How come he hasn't come back? What's wrong? But when he came out, he was unable to speak to them. And they realized that he had seen a vision in the temple. And he kept making signs to them, you know. He's making signs, telling them what it was. He's trying to make all these signs. And he kept making signs to them, but he remained mute. He could not speak. Verse 23, when the days of his priestly service were ended, he went back home. So he had there was a period of time. They served a certain number of days, and then he went home. So this was his routine. After these days, Elizabeth, his wife, became pregnant. She conceived and kept herself in seclusion for 5 months, saying, this is the way the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked with favor upon me to take away my disgrace among people. I mean, you know, the word men, anthropos, means people. So here he was. She was now expecting a baby. All right, now we come to chapter 1, and we're dropping all the way down to verse 57, where the story of John the Baptist continues. Now the time had come for Elizabeth to give birth. He's a miracle child, and time had come. Things come at the right time. God does things on time. He talks about when the fullness of time came in the book of Galatians, God sent forth his son. So now the time had come for Elizabeth to give birth, and she gave birth to a son. Well, her neighbors and her relatives heard that the Lord had displayed his great mercy toward her. Wow! Elizabeth was able to conceive. Elizabeth had a baby. And notice that all their relatives attributed to, not to an accident, not to something happened to you, but to the Lord. This happened to be God's mercy to her. They were rejoicing with her, so happy for you. Oh, Elizabeth, this is great. You always wanted a baby. You wanted a child. You got a child now. This is so wonderful. And it happened that on the eighth day, they came to circumcise the child, just like they did, you know, that's according to the law. They come to the priest, and they were going to call him Zacharias after his father. All the people, well, you know, I mean, this is traditional, you know, you name a child after his father. It's very traditional. It's very thing. You know, people do that today. A lot of people. I mean, any of you named after your father here? Anybody named here after their father? Not one. Okay, that's fine. but a lot of people are named after their parents, you know. And at that time, they did. So they've just assumed, all the people assuming he's going to be called Zacharias after his father. But his mother answered and said, no, indeed. But he shall be called John. John? Whose name is John? Listen to what they say. There is no one among our relatives who's called by that name. You got a name that nobody's named that. You name them after somebody. Now, how many of you are named after somebody? An uncle, an aunt, a cousin, somebody in your family. Okay, so somebody. Okay, there's somebody. Several of you named after somebody in your lineage. But there's nobody called John in your family. What in the world, you know? So the mother speaks up. No, his name's going to be called John. And they didn't like that. They said to her, there's no one called by that name. So they, you know, the guy can't speak. So they made signs to his father as to what he wanted to call him. You know, what do you want to call him? And they're making signs out there to Zacharias. And he asked for a tablet. Give me a tablet. Because I can't speak, what am I going to call? Say. And he wrote the following. His name is John. Not that we're going to call him John. Not that he will be called John. Not that we're going to do this. His name is John. And they were all shocked. This is your son. Don't you want a son named after you? And no, he says, his name is John. And at that very second, verse 64, at once his mouth was opened, and his tongue was healed or loosed, and he began to speak in praise of God. And fear came on all those living around them, and all these matters were being talked about in all the hill country of Judea. All who heard them kept them in mind, saying, what then will this child turn out to be? I mean, is this a special birth? Is this a child that's a special person? Because the hand of the Lord was certainly with him. What is this? What's this baby going to be in the long run? What an impact is he going to be? He was a transitional person. The scriptures say that the law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, Jesus said, the kingdom of God is preached. We'll talk more about the impact of this unusual person on your life in our next sermon.